Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Conscious Vibe Podcast,
where we elevate intellect through conscious dialogue
while exploring race, politics, business, and culture.
I'm Dr. Daryl L. Jones.
And I'm Charles D. Mitchell.
Welcome to the Conscious Vibe. Andrew Kennedy, my boy, my man, Drew, coming to us from Jamaica, from University of Virginia, from Israel.
Ooh. I heard Texas was in there somewhere. Yeah.
Chicago. Flew in from Chicago this morning.
Okay.
We're going to all kick it this weekend, watch a little Final Four, okay. Do that thing. So, welcome. Glad to have you, man.
Hey, man. Hey, man. I'm just blessed to be here, man. So,
it's nice to meet you.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me, man.
Well, look, here's what we do. We just really, it's just a conversation like we always talk about. And really more than anything, we just want our audience to learn about you, your background. Let's just take it from like growing up in Jamaica and how you made your way to University of Virginia. What we didn't bring up with the basketball is a probably an important part of that along the way.
Yeah.
So let's talk.
Well, thank you. But I wasn't really supposed to be here, you know, growing up in Kingston, and not a lot of opportunities, third world country. But, you know, fortunately, education was always stressed in the home. You know, strong mom, strong dad, blessed. And but still not a lot of opportunities in Kingston, Jamaica. So, you know, went to school, did well. But one day this sport of basketball was introduced to me by my older brother, Michael, who went to a rival high school, which was Kingston College. In Jamaica, infrastructure is very British. We drink tea in the 100-degree heat. We play cricket, you know, very, very, very British infrastructure, but basketball wasn't played. So one day he comes and he pulls me to the court, and I'm like, oh, man, this is a pretty cool game. But we still instantly loved the game, but we were ridiculed because, I'm not, just to educate you guys a little bit, Jamaica and the West Indies are women are world champions in a game called netball, which is very similar to basketball, but there's no backboard. So there's a shooting aspect to it, and there's no dribbling, ton of passing, fundamentally sound. So although it looked like basketball, it looked like netball.
How do you advance the ball in that sport?
So, yeah, by passing.
That's the only way.
Cutting, passing, and yes, very fundamental. And so.
Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah, never. Netball. Check it out. Yeah, check it out. Yeah, it's an amazing game. And so at the time, they were like, why are you guys playing netball? You know, the guys don't play netball.
Got it.
So anyway, but quickly got really good at it and followed my brother's footsteps. He was at rival high schools and just, you know, kind of flourished at the game. And the reason I say I'm not supposed to be here because at that time, unlike today, you know, there weren't many scouts or, you know, scouting publications, people coming to Jamaica to mine basketball talent. Mm-hmm. However, my brother had taken a tour of the United States and gotten a scholarship to a small school in Texas, San Jacinto, and he was a really good player, had a good game, and the coach was like, man, where are you from? We don't know who you are. Are there any other players like you? He says, I'm from Jamaica. Are there any players like you? He says, actually, my younger brother is pretty good. Take a look at him. I was offered a scholarship sight unseen.
Wow.
To the same school?
No, to a different school. Amarillo College in Texas, which is in the Panhandle. I didn't even know where the Panhandle was. And little did I know it was not only were there no black folks, very, very few black people there, but it was in the middle of the Texas Panhandle, tumbleweeds.
Yeah.
I never owned a coat in my life. So that's where my basketball journey started. And so I ended up being player of the year. And
what position?
So I was I played 2-3. I was a small shooting guard and a small forward, but I ended up playing the 3 in college. And then my recruiting process was also, which goes again, you know, I'm not supposed to be here. I'm the player of the year in the conference. We're at the national tournament, and I'm being recruited by a lot of people. And, you know.
You're getting another recruiting call right now.
I get up. So I'm playing against this team. I have a great game. The University of Virginia was at the game. So the coach that was there recruiting at the time, Dave Odom, who ended up signing Tim Duncan.
Mm-hmm. Wake Forest.
Wake Forest. He was at the game, but he wasn't at the game looking at me. He was scouting this guy by the name of Michael Porter Jr. Does that name sound familiar to you? So Michael Porter Sr.
Okay.
So he was also a really good player. But by the end of the game, I'd played so well that I'd caught his eye. And he's like, who is this guy? And everybody was like, what do you mean? You don't know who he is? He's the player of the year in junior college. Da, da, da. He had no idea who I was. And so, true story, I took Michael Porter Jr.'s scholarship. Virginia had one scholarship to give because they never recruit junior college players, typically because of academics. And it's a, you know.
So you played for Terry Holland?
I played for Terry Holland. No. So I got the loans. I was the first junior college signee to the University of Virginia.
Where did Porter end up going?
I think he went to Missouri.
Wow.
The family ended up in Missouri.
In Missouri.
Yeah, how about Michael, that?
How about that?
Michael Jr. played for Missouri for that one.
Yeah. So let me ask this. So obviously when you're in Jamaica, there's limited competition, right? Because this isn't a major sport. Where did you develop the skill set? How did you even know you were good?
So I didn't know I was good. I just played and I followed my brother and we competed. We played one-on-one. Mm-hmm. And so I ran track initially. And I played ping pong, which is another, you know, and that's a fun fact. I'm a really, really, really good ping pong player.
You got a ping pong table?
You're going to find one. We're going to find one.
So, brother, we're going to play some ping
pong. Before he leaves on
you might
Tuesday,
not want to play me.
Before he leaves just on saying. Tuesday, we're going to find a ping pong table. We're also going to go play horse.
It's Operation Say No More.
And I played soccer growing up. So the fundamentals, footwork, hand-eye, I'm looking back now, this is what, you know, because I didn't drill or I was barely coached. And so a lot of it was just literally playing with my friends all day, every day. And I remember the very first college basketball game I saw, and little did I know, looking back then, was I saw Sports Illustrated, Patrick Ewing, Ralph Sampson on the cover.
Oh, 19. Wow.
That was the first, and I was like, wow. Virginia. Wow. Little did I know, 3 years later,
you'd be there.
How about that?
How about that?
So who was on your team at UVA?
So Olden Polonese was the main player until he stole the headphones. We were supposed to be number one in the country until he tricked off. And Tom Sheehy, who was one of the better players, just 6'9", power forward, really good guy. He was player of the year. One of the better players coming out of New York, Richard Morgan, who was one of the better players in the Virginia area. He was from Salem, Virginia. Lance Blanks, I don't know if you know that name. Lance, one of my best friends.
Yeah, I'm an ACC kid, man. I was watching that stuff growing up, you know.
Lance Blanks, who ended up transferring to Texas and then was part of ICE, what do they call it? That Texas with, they were really, really good. And then Lance ended up being the assistant GM for LeBron. And then he ended up being GM here in Phoenix and then looped me in.
Oh, that's where
I ended up being here in Phoenix initially. And kind of all ties in, you know.
Ah.
Yeah.
Man.
I know.
That's a heck of a journey, man.
I know.
So what did you study at
UVA? Communications.
Okay,
communications.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. So I graduated in 1987 and then there was a moratorium. There was a lockout. And so although I was in Philly, I was literally living with my boy in his basement. And then I couldn't anymore. And my agent called and said, I have this job for you in the Philippines. And let's go there until, that was my first paying job. Went to the Philippines, loved it. It was an awesome experience. Put some money in my pocket for the summer or set me
playing
up.
Playing or coaching?
Playing in the Philippines. I lived in Manila. It was It was an amazing, amazing experience.
Draft pick of the Mavericks, though, right?
No. The rights were traded to Philadelphia. Okay. My rights were traded to Philly. I was drafted by the Mavericks, but traded to Philly.
I have to go back.
Second round.
Did you live on the lawn your senior year at UVA?
No. The only player who lived on the lawn was Ralph.
Ralph.
Yeah. I remember
he lived on the lawn.
Yeah. Pretty prestigious honor. Yeah. But no. And see, I was only there for 2 years.
Right.
And so even though I was all ACC and all ACC, it's really challenging to get on the lawn. But Ralph was the only.
He's the only one I've ever heard lived on the lawn.
Lived on the lawn, yeah.
He did.
So the criteria is ridiculous.
Experience any culture shock with all these transitions? I mean, what was the most significant?
Walking into Amarillo, Texas.
That's what I'm saying.
And nobody looked like us.
Right.
And Jamaica is 80% us. You know, there's different shades and they're Caucasian people. I'm Caucasian Jamaican, but I'd never. So that was my first experience with that. The coach was Caucasian. You know, some of my teammates, I would say is a 60-40 split probably. But we had a really good group of guys. Some of them I'm still in touch with to this day. And they were just really, really supportive because I was like a whirlwind. Because at that time, junior college players wasn't a very good stigma attached to junior. Mm-hmm. You know, there were typically guys who were super talented but didn't have grades.
Yep.
Or there were some other issues. I didn't know that at the time. So here I come. I'm a pretty good student. And I'm also a pretty good player. And, you know, they're like, well, you know, who are you? You know? So it was
from
cool.
Jamaica.
And from Jamaica.
You're like, why are you here?
Yeah. And I'm just this whole whirlwind and to be the player of the year and All-American. And then to be recruited by everybody. And then Virginia. A little did I know, there was a huge push for me to stay in state. I knew nothing about recruiting. I knew nothing about all that stuff. So
Didn't happen.
It came at me. I was like, whoa.
It didn't happen.
They tried. I'm just trying. I don't want
to. had to redirect that.
Charles, I had no idea.
Actually.
So my roommates would be like tripping. You know, they'd be like, did Willis Reed just walk in our house? Did. So I'm like, who?
You don't. So Drew, if we, first of all, we love talking about.
Just saying, I was player of the year, junior college player of the year, Texas player of the year. So this was when like Spud Webb, Larry Johnson.
So whose game in the modern era, let's call it 2000s plus, modeled their game after yours? Without knowing it.
See, my game changed. It's weird because by the time I became a pro and lived overseas and started playing more four. So I was more like a small ball four. So I'm kind of like a
Buck Williams
combination of like a Draymond Green.
I can't see Buck.
No, but I had a really good post game, but I didn't shoot a ton of threes because the 3-point shot just wasn't a thing back then.
Yeah. No.
But super efficient mid-range, and I'm trying to. That's a good question. But I loved Tim Duncan. I just thought he was, you know, not only because Dave Odom also recruited him, but just the type of person he was, the way he carried himself.
Yeah.
So professional. I mean, he's just like
he is, man. Just fundamentals. I
mean, oh my gosh! So
you were the master of the up and under,
master of all of that stuff. Footwork, all of that stuff. So
off the glass.
Everything.
15-footer.
Yeah, 17, 18. Yeah, mm-hmm. It was money. Yeah. And so, it was a lot of fun. So that year, I think the All-ACC team was like Kenny Smith, Muggsy Bogues, myself, Horace Grant, and I think Brad Daugherty, just to kind of give you
like. That's funny. I was at Carolina then.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow. And then.
Yeah.
Then I played against Len Bias, and I thought, you know, I was like, whoa.
He was all that and more.
He was all that in everything.
This dude.
In everything.
And then some. I mean, and I'll never forget the day I was in summer school. I was taking an anatomy class, and the news broke.
Yeah.
And it was like the world stopped.
I was on an internship in the summer, and when that news broke, couldn't believe it. 2 days after he got drafted by the Celtics, number 2 pick.
So did you then unwittingly set the stage for more young Jamaican brothers to? That's beautiful, man.
Absolutely. So after that, I started a foundation, the Basketball Foundation. And because I immediately realized, and I did it in conjunction with some friends of mine I grew up with, because we had to give back. I mean, it ultimately became a little bigger than we were able to, because it's a massive project. There's just so many kids in need and so many kids. Yeah, yeah. So for 7 years, we hosted a camp, and then we would bring down. We eventually got a sponsorship with Nike to provide shoes. But prior to that, I was going to every NBA team and just getting shoes from, you know, by the end of the season, I know all the trainers. I'm like, look, I need this. I don't care what they look like. We have a need for this. So they would all package it up and send it to me, and I would ship it. Finally, we got a sponsorship deal with Nike, and they provided, you know, uniforms. Mm-hmm. And then it even took big, soap, deodorant, toothpaste. A lot of these kids showed up. Samardo Samuels, I don't know if you know, I'll never forget the day he walked into my camp barefoot, didn't have a pair of shoes. Steven, one of our guys, happened to wear a size 15 and took it. He was like 12 years old and wore a size 15. Jeez. And, you know, gave him the shoes and so many stories like that. So really, really excited. We have a number of guys who have gotten scholarships, a lot of them to smaller schools. A lot of them had to take the junior college route as well. Sure. But were able to get an education. And eventually, you know, just provide for their family and you know, have meaningful careers. So that's been really, really cool to see. But unfortunately, we had to stop. This went on for about 8 years. But it became a little, we had to deal with, like a lot of third world countries, there's a lot of other factors involved. And, you know, there's a lot of...
people got their hands out. Everybody's got a little piece of the pie. Yeah.
Yeah. And when you send stuff, it doesn't show up. Mm-hmm. When you know, stuff is supposed to be here, you got to have armed protection, you know. So it was just a lot. We were bleeding, couldn't really keep up, and we had problems getting enough funding. And it still kind of rubs me a little the wrong way. But it for the time being, I think we did some good. It would be something to revisit, actually. But we need the government there and the association to kind of get their act together. And that hasn't happened. You know, you have to have a relationship with them on ground, boots on ground. And it's been really challenging. It's been unfortunate. So, but I think we did a lot of good. And, you know, it's nice to get a call or an email every once in a while from someone and say, hey, remember me. Yeah,
man, that's
this is what I'm awesome. Doing now. So,
Israel. Israel. Let's talk about Israel.
What do you need? What do you need to know about?
what got you? What allowed you to spend time in Israel? Let's talk about that first and foremost.
So Israel, very interesting. I was playing in Spain. I was in Valladolid, had a good year, and my agent was like, "Look, there's this team. They're perennial number two. They've never, you know, there's a team there that dominates the competition called Maccabi Tel Aviv, but there's this team in the north, Galil Elyon on the Sea of Galilee. They have three other Americans. They have four Americans, three of them naturalized, and they really, really like you." And I was like, I'm not going to Israel. Everything I've heard has been negative, and actually I like living. Because, you know, you hear all these things about the war and fighting. Yeah. And so I was like, he's like, okay, can you at least just go see it? You know, just go visit. So I did. I jumped on a plane and I went inside. I remember landing and it was like their entire team stayed around. They had just finished the season. And they showed me around. I met the coaching staff. It was really, really cool. And I ended up signing there. They told me their goals and, you know, I just somehow clicked. Mm-hmm. You know, when you walk into a group of guys, it very seldom happens, but when it does, you know, mm-hmm. you know, and that was the feeling. And And so I signed a 2-year contract with them for some pretty good money, with the intention to eventually win the championship. So, make a long story short, that's how I went to Israel. And a year later, the first year we won the National Cup, we beat Maccabi Tel Aviv, which had never been done before. And then the second year, we ended up winning the championship, which was the first in the history of Israeli basketball that a team other than Maccabi Tel Aviv won the championship. So it was really historic.
In the two, the cup and the championship, is it?
So the National Cup, think NCAA tournament.
Got it.
Knockout, you right. know, home, Got yeah. Single, okay. elimination. Single elimination, okay. all the teams in the league, that's the cup. The regular championship, think NBA championship. Got so it. It's a playoff, best of 7 series, advancing. So that was a difference. And they had never lost. I mean, and so our team became very popular because at that time, Channel 5 was also, it was like the birth of ESPN. I'm mm-hmm. trying to equate it yeah. to, so in conjunction with our rise and just phenomenal play, there was also the birth of ESPN, Sport 5. And so we were on TV all the time and we became, you know, pretty famous. And
so the birth of your popularity over there probably happened too, didn't it?
Yes.
It's funny, so that's where you met Ponch, right?
So I met Ponch. I met Ponch about 5 years after Poncho, that.
We were in LA this past summer in August for Poncho's 50th birthday, and we go out Beverly Hills, and we go to what's the name of the spot we went to? Wally's. Went to Wally's, and there's these Israelis that are outside. We're talking there, you know, they're talking about it. They're having a conversation, he and Ponch, about, you know, fighting yeah. the ball. They remember.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing.
That's got to
it's,
feel good.
It's still surreal. Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I've heard some other stories too.
Some of the most beautiful people, very welcoming. Yeah. And, you know, obviously there's the religious aspect mm-hmm. of it that you kind of dive into and, mm-hmm. you know, trips to the Wailing Wall, Via Dolorosa. I mean, all of that, the Dead yeah. Sea and Getty. I mean, there's so many. So I lived on the Sea of Galilee. So my team was Galil Elyon. And yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Did you, you know? And your coach was David Blatt, right?
David was my roommate.
Blatt?
And David was my roommate. He took me under his wings. He was my roommate for a year. We played together for a year until he tore his Achilles. He was older than me.
You remember Blatt, right?
He was a coach of the Cavaliers.
Coach LeBron. Yeah, okay. Wow, man.
Yeah, so he was my roommate.
Wow.
And yeah. then he became my coach. I was the first American to play for him. I was actually playing for another team, and he bought out my contract, mm-hmm. brought me back to the Galil, and we had a really, really young team, and we ended up placing fourth. We were supposed to be last in the league. I was MVP of the league. It was his first Coach of the Year award, and I was Player of the Year. And so, yeah, from that time, we've just been, you know.
He really kind of gets the credit, quite frankly. He took he got fired, and Ty Lue got the job. And they won. I think they won the championship that season.
They did. He was yeah. he was coaching the All-Star game, and yes. they still fired him.
Coaching the All-Star game. They fired him.
Best record in the East.
Exactly. Wow. And then Ty Lue yeah. takes that same team.
Same team. The championship. 2-3 months later, they win yeah. the championship.
Yeah.
Yeah. So all these parallels, man. But yeah, I mean, I got to say, first time I met Poncho, I got to tell this story. We were looking for a big man, and we'd had a couple guys come in and try out. And I typically don't play a lot in the preseason. And I remember we were at a tournament in Tiberias, which is a small town outside of Kiryat Shmona, where we lived. And he literally, they drove him from the airport. He comes on to play, and we're playing a team that finished second or third, I think, the year prior. So they had a pretty good team. I'd never seen someone this athletic or played as hard as Poncho did. He was blocking everything. He was dunking. I mean, he put on a show, and it ended. I'm like, have we signed him yet? I went to him. I was like, have we signed this dude yet?
Where did Poncho play college?
Colorado.
And then he literally, he had cramps after the game. He played so hard and played, oh man. And they signed him right out. Yeah, signed him. And then he actually lived with me for a month until they could get his apartment and everything straightened away. And so that's how we became friends.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So then, Drew, while all this is happening and popularity's rising, you guys are performing, everything's coming together, are you even thinking about... Let's see, I'm not even going to ask you that.
Go ahead. I'll go ahead. Go ahead.
Are you thinking about coming back to the U.S. and playing at all?
A little bit.
Okay.
A little bit. But here's the thing. I was just having such a great time. Because back then, the money was, believe it or not, comparable. You know.
I believe it.
It was comparable. And so, and I was getting an opportunity to see the world.
Absolutely.
I was in Paris. In the summer times, I was on the French Riviera. I would take trips to Greece, and so I consider myself a little bit of a student of the world, and so I love to travel, and so just the opportunity to be
absolutely. Man.
And what was the schedule like? Because I don't believe you played like these guys play
we played twice a week.
That's what I thought,
which was much better. And then I was in. So we did practice twice a day. That was the difference.
Oh, okay.
We practiced twice a day. And then I remember going to Russia and Turkey and, oh, man, and Serbia. And it was just a great opportunity to see the world and to see how different people live and to be, you know.
So I'm going to save him a little bit because I know you're trying to keep pushing the button. He's acting like there's nothing in there. He's acting like it's empty in there. I know it's not empty. When I was in New York, I met this young lady from Italy, and she was beautiful.
Of course.
I mean, incredible.
Well, Italiano.
And we were talking, and she was talking about, you know, well, yeah, there's more brothers over there than you might think. I said, really? She said, yeah. We used to, her and her girlfriends, they used to go to the basketball practices and just sit in the stands. So I don't know if you want to talk about that. Is that a lie?
Yeah. I'm gonna plead the fifth. I'm gonna plead the fifth.
Okay.
Let's put it this way: European women, the lifestyle is. I feel like I'm more European than anything. I mean, the differences in their mentality, the way they approach life. Mm-hmm. I think they have it right. You know, and
kind
also
of a free spirit.
They just, you know, they believe in life. You know, they really carpe diem. Israelis, that's what I said. They seize the day. You know, literally. You know,
okay.
And I don't know if that's because they're surrounded by enemies that want to blow them off the face of the earth.
Right.
You know, but the mentality is such. They live. The women live. You know, they want experiences. They go after it. You know. So I don't know if that answers your question.
You're getting there. You're getting there.
So fast forward. That was a good way of putting it, by the way. Fast forward. So right now you're with the Washington Wizards as a scout. Tell us about that. What's that life like? I know you travel a lot. I know you're on a call earlier today. Evaluate some potential free agents.
Yeah.
What's that life like?
I love it. I mean, it's just a continuation of traveling but in this case, we are trying to mine talent and we're trying to, realize talent and just to see how they fit into the DNA of the Wizards. And that in itself is exciting, you know, and because every player is different, they have all these different skill sets. And then when you try to factor in the money, and, you know, you factor in also all these intangibles that they may have, as well as you're digging into the person, you know, because at the end of the day, all of those have to kind of fit so you can make and educate the best decision you can for your team. So that's kind of what I do. You know.
So help me with my imagination, because I would assume, you know, when I think about this, you think about it in terms of... You have a style of play that you as a team have. You sort of have, it's kind of like taking a company and saying, okay, here's how we want to go to market. Here's our strategy. So you have a style of play that you want to take to the season, right? Whatever season you're in. based upon either a coach's philosophy or the current talent you have on the team. And then you're trying to fill in sort of blocks in terms of like, okay, we need this person or this kind of player or this kind of player. But you're also in the same time trying to be mindful of how you spend your resources at certain positions, right? Because you don't want to overpay for a guy who's, you know, your seventh, eighth, ninth guy off the bench. But you also want to make sure you have a quality person in that 2-3 slot relative to like who's going to give you, you know, 32, 34 minutes a game, and make sure that your dollars equal the talent that you're putting on the floor to execute to obviously win games.
Charles, there's a GM in you somewhere.
He's testing him. He's testing to see.
I'm making an assumption. I just want to get a sense from Drew if I'm going down the right street. Is that how it all works?
So the money thing is funny because it's so just otherworldly. I think the average NBA player makes $10 million a year.
Average?
Average.
Holy cow.
Average.
Well, that's because you got guys.
And they push you. They push you.
You got guys making 50.
But still,
that's a pretty big number.
It is a big number.
But you talk about, so let's talk money for a second. The salary cap in and of itself is such a complicated structure that we hire guys from Harvard and MIT just to handle the salary cap, just to, you know, try to manipulate it, you know. It's very complicated. The pay structures, you have different, you have super max exceptions. You have, oh my God, you have mid-level exceptions. You have, you know, there's a minimum salaries. Now you have G League players who are paid two-way salaries and exhibit 10s and all of that. You have to kind of throw in the pot and make it work. And it is not easy. And yes, you don't want to overpay. But more often than not, when you're in free agency, you are gonna overpay.
Well, the market dictates it.
Yeah. Because you know, it's just supply and demand, pretty much, you know. And what you value, somebody else might value, but they may have more money available. And so, you know, you get outbid, you know. But we have structures in place that evaluate salaries and where to slot people, and you try to keep it within those norms, and it's very, very challenging. But yeah, my job mostly is to identify the talent and to see if this talent fits within our culture, our style of play, and ultimately how can we maximize this talent, whether it's a young kid or somebody who is, you know,
is 3 or 4 years. College and pro?
So I just do pro.
Okay.
I just do pro now. I used to do a lot more college, but I'm not as involved. I have a small role in the college draft process, but not as much. And so, yeah, it's a little different. But I like this better because whereas in college, you may not be, you might not necessarily be evaluating apples and apples. At the end of the day, you can at least say you're evaluating NBA players. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, absolutely, you know? Makes sense.
You know,
the more I watch the game, and particularly, you know, a lot of teams where you see guys have injuries or you know, taking, I don't want to say rest days off, but the more I watch this game, the more I realize that 1 through 12, 14, whatever the number is. There's a lot of talent on these teams. Like, guys who are in the league playing basketball are really the best basketball players in the world. They really are.
Yeah, so I know.
When you watch a team like, and this is probably a really, really bad example, but you watch a team like Golden State beat Miami without Stephen Curry, Klay Thompson, or Draymond Green. You know,
it just makes you realize. Now they're not going to beat them over a five-game series, but on any given night.
Yeah. Any given night, you know, you can get beat by a bunch of no-name guys showing up on the court who just want to prove something.
But those no-name guys were All-Americans, Player of the Year in their conferences. Right. You know, first or second-round picks that might not have been given an opportunity, you know, but they're the cream of the, you know, they're the top of the top, you know.
So when you see something like Westbrook and what's going on in L.A. right now, what goes through your mind?
So we had Westbrook. Prior to that, we were the team that traded him. Well, actually, he asked to be traded. you know, to and we got back Kuz, we got back KP,
yeah,
and the draft pick, you know, and so
so Laker fan shaking his head right now.
I know. So it's very tough because I think for us, Westbrook was great. You know, we needed someone. He plays so hard.
He does. You can't take that away from him.
You cannot. Yeah, you cannot take that away from him. It's just interesting to see what's going on now because
it's not his fault.
It feels
really
like something else is going
but
on.
But it's not his fault. I think it's a bad fit. It was a bad fit.
It's a terrible fit.
Okay, but
it's
hold
a bad
on, guys.
Fit.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute.
It's a terrible fit.
It's a bad fit. On the court, it's a bad fit.
Okay, hold on.
Okay, come on.
Hold on. We've seen some of the shots.
Yeah.
We've seen.
Oh, they're horrible.
We've seen a different type of play.
He's never shot like that.
But
I think
he's never
now
shot
he's,
like
now
that. Something up here. We can blame Westbrook for some of this stuff.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Have you seen some of the shots?
And
no, even the last three he hit in game. I was like, dude, you know you want
to. But what I would say is I don't think his shot selection has ever been really good.
It has not.
He always takes bad shots.
Okay, but his shooting
is illuminated now because you're playing with LeBron and, well, kind of, you're not really playing with Anthony Davis. He's been hurt most of the year. But the point is, he takes really poor shots. It doesn't take away from how hard he plays.
No.
He gets to the back. But here's one thing I have noticed.
I think
I've noticed him miss shots. It's not the jump shots that bother me because I don't think of him as a really good shooter, quite frankly.
But it hasn't stopped him.
It has not stopped him. But what I do think of him as is a really good finisher. And I've never seen him miss at the rim as much as he
so. So that's what I'm saying. I mean, that's kind of the point. But yeah,
guy's a hard guy. He leaves it out there on the floor.
He leaves it on the floor.
Yes, he does. Hard,
but it's a poor fit. And I really blame Rob Pelinka and, I don't know.
Who else?
LeBron. I don't want to say
who else.
I really like LeBron. Obviously he had a hand in that as well. You know, they wanted Russell Westbrook. I don't understand why they wanted him. It's a bad basketball fit. When you look at it on the floor, you know, even if you're just a casual observer of the game, the way he plays basketball is very different relative to how a guy like LeBron, who's ball dominant, who distributes the ball really well and understands when he needs to step up and score, or when he needs to have Anthony Davis get the rock, or when he needs to get some of the other guys who can, like, you know, get Malik Monk the ball when he can score the basket a few times. Like, he knows how to do those things. But Russell's putting his head down.
So when you look at Ja now, is that a surprise to you?
No. I remember when I saw him. I wish I could show you my scouting report of
not
him.
At all.
I said he was, when I first saw him at a game at Illinois State 3-4 years ago. Special,
right?
Special. Special athlete.
How's a kid like that end up at Murray State?
So, good question. And I think it was, because he was on the same AAU team as, was it Ja? And, but I think he was just so frail. He was just so little.
He's narrow, man. Yeah.
Yeah, he had to kind of grow into his body a little bit.
Those hops were always there. They had to.
No, man. It was a pencil.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. Well, sometimes, you know, you miss on guys like that. But by his freshman year, sophomore year, everybody knew who he was, you know. Yeah. He's special, man.
No, I do get it. Guys get missed.
Not a lot. Not a lot. But it happens.
Yeah, guys get missed.
Did you get missed? They didn't.
Thank you.
They still don't recognize it. They still don't recognize your talent.
Thank you.
Oh, is that what it is?
That's what he's trying to
say. Oh, okay. Okay.
He said, you hear him say it three times.
I only said it twice.
Okay, I'll put butter on it.
So one thing I don't want to miss, we have to talk about, is crypto. NFTs. We got to talk about that. I know that's a big deal for you. I know you're really involved.
Well, it's more a big deal for my brother.
Yeah, I know, but you're your brother.
Yeah.
Supporting him in that. And that's like something that's you're getting more and more involved in. Trying to teach brothers like me who don't know anything about
I'm
it.
I'm trying to learn it. Honestly, I'm trying to learn. My whole more focus is more the NIL situation.
Where we
provide opportunities for young brothers who are athletes to maximize their potential, and the NFTs and crypto is just a vehicle to kind of do that. But we need to have my brother on for the whole crypto talk because I don't want to talk out of turn about it. But I'm still learning about it, Charles. So I don't feel like I can.
Well, what about the NIL then? Can you speak to that?
Yeah, I think it's long overdue.
Yeah.
You know, I really think it's long overdue. And I wish, can you imagine if when Ralph Sampson or Patrick Ewing were playing back in the day, how they could have monetized, you know?
And I think,
and for a young brother like me who grew up with nothing, and, you know, if I had to take my girlfriend out to the movies, or, you know, back in the day when I was in school,
that can be embarrassing,
was,
man. Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, it gets rid of the ridiculousness of this whole scenario of college basketball and guys
100%
playing for an education. And look, don't get me wrong.
And young ladies, too.
Don't get me wrong. I think the opportunity to go on a college athletic scholarship to obtain an education is a huge opportunity, right? And I think that's something that we should not make light of.
True.
Because it creates, you know, what is it? They always, it's 2% that actually make it to professional sports. So the other 98, you really need to take advantage of it.
Exactly.
And get an opportunity to get an education. Absolutely.
But the time it takes for that 98% to realize that they're not part of the 2%, mm-hmm. wasted opportunities.
Oh, for sure.
Because they all believe it or not, that they're going pro.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Yeah, and you should believe that, right?
You should believe that. But to
not. No, but I guess the point I was saying, yeah, I don't know if they should, but because if by your sophomore, junior, and you're averaging 2 points, you're not going pro.
Well, I mean, coming into the scenario,
but not. You know what I'm saying? But there's
coming into it, and you're putting work in, and you're coming in, you're coming in at the same level as the other four chip, five star, you know, players coming in. Why wouldn't you say to yourself, if I just work hard and work on my game and get better, that there's that shot for me? Who knows, right? But to your point, 2-3 years down the road, you got to figure it out and go, wait a minute, this is a different path. I need to get this education under wraps and figure that out. But I do think having had the opportunity years and years ago would get really the silliness of, you know, I get in trouble because I took a couple hundred bucks from a booster or just some guy on the street who was trying to be helpful, so I could go out to take my girlfriend to dinner. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's a travesty.
Or, you know, you see people walking around with your jersey, they pay $200 for it and you get nothing.
Oh, yeah, it's ridiculous. It's crazy.
And I can't even,
And now, like, for instance, Penny Hardaway is in trouble now in Memphis.
Yeah.
You know,
for
helping out James Wiseman before he was coach, right? He was his AAU coach, I believe. And this is before he became the coach at Memphis. And because he gave his mom or someone, he helped move, I think, from wherever they live to Memphis, family goes, whatever the case may be. Long story short, he gets in trouble not because he was affiliated with the program, because he was considered a booster because he was an alum.
The NCAA is
ridiculous. It makes no sense, man.
It really is. I think going back to Ed O'Bannon, I think he was one of the first pioneers.
Thank God for him, man.
Right?
I mean, because he fought the good fight. He stuck his neck out there. And
probably got nothing for it.
He sure did, man.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's great to see. I mean, you hear some stuff now. Guys are getting, you know, broke off, and it's long overdue,
mm-hmm.
you know, because that pot is just huge. You know,
So you think you go back, though? Do you go back and guys like Reggie Bush gets their Heisman Trophy back? I mean, things like that. Do you go back and now the egregious sort of violations that occurred where guys got a little...
Well, what's the context of being egregious? I mean...
I agree with you.
That context matters.
Yeah, I totally agree.
You know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
And we all know
just about every
school does it in some shape or form. It's just
some
level.
Just
and the masterminds aren't the ones going down though. See,
no,
that's the problem. So
exactly
Merle
right.
Cole, if you
I know Merle like, very well.
Okay, and I used to
He's
work
a Chicago
with Merle at
kid.
Nike. Absolutely.
Did you?
Yeah, well, I was with 20 years
at Nike
in Chicago, and Merle was on the same team I was on.
Merle went to Clemson.
He
was the dude that he's like, Drew, I got to run. So he hooked me up with a run at University of Chicago with Obama and all of them. You know,
very connected, good brother, great family. And you know what? He's telling it how it is now. You should read that book.
What is it?
He's got a book that's
he does?
Out. Yeah, I believe the book is out. And I'll get you guys the name of it. But, you know, he's either doing time now or about to.
Oh, geez. Didn't, like, Chuck Person do time?
Yeah.
He was at Auburn.
Is it Auburn?
Yeah.
He's doing. I think
sad,
he's
man.
He's on time.
Yeah. It's ridiculous these guys are doing.
But homeboy that was at, what's the head coach?
Where?
For, was it Florida? White dude?
Not Billy Domino.
No. I'm like recent. Oh gosh. Anyway, yeah, he, you know, he's still doing
this thing. Absolutely.
Slap on the wrist.
Still coaching.
Yeah. Yeah, it still happens, man.
So Drew, what's the long term goal, man? I mean, obviously you're in a great spot doing great work.
I'd love to be a GM at some point. That's the goal. The opportunity, it's hard, but you know, life is hard, my man. You know, opportunities. I feel like just the opportunity to turn a franchise around. I love evaluating players, and I love the idea of putting together, you know, a team and, you know, hopefully get some success down the road. So that's the goal, you know.
That's the goal. You get there.
So, you know, it's interesting to hear you articulate that because I just had lunch with Josh Scobie again.
Okay.
He's
was on the podcast.
Yeah, scout for the Arizona Cardinals here. And he talks about it, man. And when these opportunities come up, you got to take them, right?
You got to be ready. You know, they don't come across a lot. There are only 30 teams, you know. And
how does that typically happen? How does an opportunity present itself? Is it more you reaching out, or is it being in the right place at the right time, just always being ready? How does it happen?
There is no book on it.
Yeah.
You do whatever you can.
Yeah.
Whether it's you calling every owner,
you just know timing matters to opportunity. I mean, all of that matters. But, you know, you just have to be ready. But obviously, my highest position has been director. I need to consistently be like an assistant GM.
Got it.
You know, so you have to get to that level, which I have not yet. At least get to that level for a year or two.
Got it.
And be successful at it. And then, you know, very seldom do you advance, you know, to a general manager role without either leading a G League team now, which is more the standard route, or be the assistant GM for one of those franchises.
So when you and I buy the Portland Trail Blazers, Drew's our guy.
Hey, sign me up. Sign me up.
Oh, there you go.
Sign me up. But you got Phoenix here, man. They are this play. Ooh, the playoffs should be
good. I hate to say, I think we're gonna see the same thing again.
I do too.
I'm not so sure. See, I believe in chemistry. I think you have the pieces when you look at, you have a young core, young players who are really good.
Mm-hmm. Really good.
Ayton, Bridges, mm-hmm. you know, you have.
Yeah, consistent
you have,
too.
Yeah, you have defenders. You have two proven stars mm-hmm. who are closers. Mm-hmm. You have a young coach who's.
I don't know about
closers.
No?
You got one, maybe. I don't know if you have two.
Who are you questioning?
You're questioning Devin?
No. Yeah, he's not an alpha.
Oh, you're questioning Devin?
Yeah, Chris is. Absolutely.
Mm, interesting.
Devin's great. Devin's amazing. Devin's a great player.
You're questioning Devin over Chris?
Mm-hmm. Wow. Absolutely. Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Here's what I will say. They are the best team in the NBA. They really are. And except for the fact that I think if it was a 7-game series, Golden State would beat them. The only the one person that can make a difference in that series where Phoenix wins is Andre Ayton. Because Golden State is thin at the five position. They're thin. Andre, quite frankly, could score at will in the paint. Kevon Looney plays really, really
but
hard.
But is anybody from the
but
West?
They don't
really
have anybody. Their plan, they've held on to this plan all season long of James Wiseman being able to be available. And now they know he's not going to be. And there's no backup plan for that. And so they're really Bielitsa, the foreign guy who comes in and plays for them, is really just not. He's more of a 3-point shooter and not much of an interior post player, and is not going to be able to defend a guy like Andre Ayton. So I think that if they can come out of the West and beat Golden State, because I don't think any other teams are better. I mean, Memphis could sneak up on you, but I don't think Memphis would beat them in a 7-game series. Then you deal with whatever's on the East, and I don't know that Milwaukee would win again, or I don't think Brooklyn's constructed.
I will put something on that
right now.
I will put something on that right now.
Particularly Ben Simmons, and I don't think Ben Simmons is going to be enough.
I will put something on that.
I like Milwaukee a lot.
Milwaukee's going to do it again.
Trust me, if Milwaukee can do it again, I'd be happy to see it. I'd be happy to see it.
I love Giannis, man. You know, I love everything he's about.
But I respect what they do, and I respect Monty Williams. I think he's an amazing coach. He should be NBA Coach of the Year, hands down. Chris Paul is the best leader in the league. That team doesn't get to where they were last year without Chris Paul. They don't. And I think he's the most clutch player in the moment. Devin's amazing, but I watched him play Golden State the other night, and Devin had a horrible game. And at the end of the game, he just, you know, he made some free throws, which, you know, you expect a guy at that level to be able to do.
You like the way Devin played in the playoffs last year?
I don't remember how he played last year.
I don't think he played terrible.
I don't think he played terrible at all.
Yeah.
I just think that last year that Milwaukee was just a better team. I really do. I felt that coming into that series.
Milwaukee
was a better
team. So
do you know Nico Harris?
Vaguely. I mean, I've met him. He probably would know me, but he's always seemed to be a cool dude. I mean, I run across him all the time, but I've never sat down and had dinner with him.
It's a connection I love for you to have. Yeah. He's a good buddy of mine. Yeah. We spent a lot of years in Nike together.
Yeah.
And he's a great dude.
Yeah. That's the word on the street with him. Yeah.
There's a couple Nike folks, I think, in that organization. Greg Nard. Came from Nike. He's a GM down there.
Yeah, I know Nico's down in Dallas now.
But so on a scale of 1 to 10 right now, and you think about your life and the journey, how happy are you?
Ooh. See, we've talked about a lot of things, but we haven't talked about
one thing that affects happiness, family.
Yeah.
And so there's some family stuff with me that Charles is aware of. That's still unresolved.
And that it shifts you toward one?
Oh.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. So okay. I'm pretty happy. I mean, if I can say that.
The question is, and you know, Drew and I have had a lot of conversation about a lot of different things. The question is Drew flourishing? That's the question.
It doesn't sound like it based on what he just said.
But he will.
Okay, yeah. He will. Yeah, I'm sure he will.
You know, everybody goes through seasons of life where you got to
figure it out.
Brother, we all.
He will flourish. Okay.
It's been a tough haul because my heart is literally broken in, you know, so I don't want to, you know. Yeah, so that affects your spirit and your, you know, you try to get centered and recentered, but
it's always there.
You bring people into the world who are important to you and they're not a part of your life all the time. Got it affects you, you know?
Yep.
So that's what I'm talking about.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Yeah. So pretty, but I have a strong community of friends, you know, oh my gosh, and four other guys that are just rooted in, they hold me accountable, they challenge me, they're not yes people, you know, you need that. And so, you know, I'm in a good place, you know.
Well, I want to keep place. You up there, so we should probably not find a ping pong table this weekend. I said we find one. I don't want
you. Because, you know, that's just a competitor in me. I'm going to see what you got.
3-point shoot.
Yeah.
That'll keep him up there too.
We have a sky hook contest. It'll make you feel good.
I'm gonna throw my hands up for that one.
So, brother, you having the? Let me just pause, man. Say it's been a pleasure, man. I love your energy.
We're going to dinner tonight too.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Yeah. You bring a wonderful energy and spirit.
Appreciate it, man. Yeah, I try to, man.
I really like that.
Well, I know what I was talking about. I'm going through a divorce. It's a pretty bad divorce.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got it.
That's what I mean, my heart, you know.
How long were you married?
18 years.
Wow.
Jeez. Yeah. Yeah, so. And, you know, a lot of, Charles and I talk, it's written a lot of checks in the last
three years. Yeah.
So, but I don't care about the checks. It's the relationship with my kids that has been manipulated and
You know, so we're trying to work through that.
What are the ages?
So I have my daughter just turned 19 yesterday. She's at the University of Illinois. My 16-year-old, she's at Whitney Young. She's a volleyball player. And then my little guy is 10. So
beautiful kids, man.
And the only one I really see is my son.
Is that right?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So it's tough. It's tough, you know, but here you have a black man who wants to be involved, has always been involved. That's all I've known.
Wow.
You know, and the courts and her, and it's just been, yeah, it's been crazy. So.
Got it.
Yeah.
Work itself out, brother.
It will.
Yep.
It will.
Yep.
It will.
Yep.
Any questions of us or anything we may have missed?
Nah, man, anytime you want to roll, I'll be available. You know, this has been cool. You know, appreciate, you know, getting the time to rap with you guys.
Well, I'm so glad really we got to make this happen, man, particularly do it in person.
Yeah.
And we got a long weekend ahead of us. We're going to have some fun here.
Yeah.
Wish you all were out here with us in Arizona.
I know. Well, I was about 15 years ago, 16 years ago, but, you know.
Well, we'll do dinner, man. We're going to we'll have a good time. Yeah,
it'll be fun. But I appreciate you brothers, man, having me on.
Absolutely.
Appreciate you. Yeah. We appreciate you. And thank you for joining us on The Conscious Vibe.
Thank you for joining us.
And check us out on tcvpodcast.com.